8 friends, 1 country house, and 6 months in isolation. Gary Steingart's latest, Our Country Friends, is a novel about love, friendship, family, and betrayal, hailed as a virtuoso performance and an homage to Chekhov. Gary Steingart is the New York Times bestselling author of the memoir Little Failure and the novels Super Sad True Love Story, Absurdistan, and The Russian Debutante's Handbook. Again, the new novel is Our Country Friends. It is now out in paperback. We spoke with Gary Steingart before a live audience at Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York.
I love everything about this book, and not least of which is that because of its locale, I mean, it's you coming up to the Hudson Valley. It's something certainly that we can relate to, and then obviously there is the idea of being, you know, cooped up with these people as a result of COVID. Give me a sense of a timeline of how the book started to unfold in your mind.
Yeah, first of all, it's great to be back to Saratoga. I am familiar with Yaddo, where I spent, I was actually there for the winter. Most people come in the warmer months, but I'm a bit of a masochist and wanted wanted to suffer the northern winter a little more. I actually do like being upstate in the winter. It really focuses the mind. And it's strange to think of this as being even more north than I am, although I know that New Yorkers from like the Adirondacks don't even consider us upstate people. We're just part of greater Metro New York or something. But I think it started right away in March. I had a dilemma because I was writing a academic satire. I teach at Columbia, and I was writing an academic satire in which NYU had taken over Manhattan and had thrown everybody out and built this big wall around the island and even had their own police force, you know, the violet helmets. I thought of everything. And then, of course, the pandemic began, and this very mild dystopia that I was writing about was vastly overtaken by this dystopia where, you know, in the beginning especially, so many people were dying. But it was two parts of it. It was the pandemic, but it was also the political response in our country at the time with our leadership at the time. I mean, I did everything the president asked. I took a lot of bleach. I dewormed myself many, many times. I tried sun therapy. Nothing worked.
The light.
Yeah.
The light. However that was supposed to work, but yes.
I sat under a lot of light. Nothing. So because of the incompetent response and because of the pandemic itself, some kind of vestigial Soviet muscle was triggered on my part, and I began to think of a way to write about it. But then what I like to do especially when I write in the dystopian vein, Super Sad True Love Story, for example, is I want to create characters that would be interesting even if you took away the dystopia, and then the dystopia is the cherry on top. Yum, yum, yum. So that's sort of what I did. The book is, as it says in the title, it's about friendship. Which is also the first book I ever wrote about friendship, because usually my books are about immigrant children in relationship with their parents, or their two immigrants are in love with each other, and Super Sad True Love Story. But this one is all about sort of my group of friends who are now hitting their 50s. And so I began writing it contemporaneously, and almost all the events in the book followed the events of that summer and fall. So if I'm writing about George Floyd, that means that happened about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
I'm just looking at the news and typing, you know.
What is that like in the sense of that contemporary fictional history?
Well, I think I admire journalists quite a bit, and I think I have a bit of a journalistic streak in me, because some of this felt like, And I used to be a contributing editor to Travel and Leisure, so I was a very dedicated travel writer, and I went all over the world. And that's sort of, you know, you're always writing things down, and you're not doing a war reporter or something like that, but you are taking things down. So for me, the idea of processing reality and just making it more fiction comes very naturally, I think. So it wasn't much of a hassle at all. I was actually enjoying the process, because it also helped me deal with the huge changes that were happening in our country.
But blessedly, you did not have a house full of people.
No. fact, the fact that I had no one to drink with accounted for the fact that this book was written in 6 months as opposed to my usual 4 years. I don't drink alone. But, you know, I have a background upstate because when I was growing up and I came as an immigrant in 1979 from Russia, I didn't speak English well or at all, really. And I had an accent, and there was a Russian bungalow colony upstate in Ellenville, New York, for those who know.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
On the other side of the Catskills. Yeah. Weirdly, I just took my 8-year-old kid to see it, and some Hasidic Jews had taken it over and then run it into the ground. God bless them. But so we kind of went through the Roman ruins of this Russian bungalow colony.
Of Neveli country.
Yeah, Neveli. Yeah, and then they took over the local hotel around there, Tamarack Lodge.
Yeah.
And also drove it into the ground, blah, blah, blah. So, but for me, that place was like a haven and a heaven. It was just because we could, it was just a bunch of Russian kids. We didn't have to, nobody made fun of us. And we had, my first crush, all my first friendships, everything took place there. So I've always loved this idea of these little bungalow colonies. But in my house, I only have like one guest house. And people do come up from the city all the time as like a fresh air fund for media types. In the book, I multiplied it by 5, and there were 5 cabins. 5, I think. So that's what we did.
Was that because of Chekhov?
Very much. So the other thing that was happening was I was reading a lot of Chekhov once the pandemic really hit its stride. Because when you think about Chekhov, what he does is his best work, I think, and I think others agree, is set in the country. And it's all kind of, the themes are very, they repeat quite a bit. If you think of Uncle Vanya, the cherry orchard, but also what I think are his best stories. I think there's a trio of stories I particularly think about. Trying to think of the English titles, Gooseberries, The Man in the Shell, and About Love. And they're all kind of themed around people are in the countryside or a small town in the provinces, and they're sort of, looking back, they're in their late 40s, early 50s, something like that, and they're thinking back on their lives and all the regrets they've had. It's a very natural thing. And the other part of that equation was for me, when I was growing up, I saw a movie called The Big Chill, and
yes.
Neither my English nor my puberty was advanced enough to fully understand what was going on in that film. But I was incredibly taken with it. And I just thought, oh, this is so sophisticated, I applied to the University of Michigan because of that film, because they're all graduates of the University of Michigan. So when my academic novel was falling apart, I called my editor and I said, it's Chekhov meets The Big Chill. What do you think? And he was like, all right, we'll do that. Like anything at this point.
Because 20 years prior, that would be a hell of a pitch.
That would be a hell of a pitch, yeah. Nowadays, I was telling my class at Columbia, I teach grad school, they're all in their 20s, and I'm like, it's like The Big Chill. And everyone's like, the what? The who?
I haven't seen it. Has it held up?
It's great. I think it's great. I don't know. I do urge a rewatch. I think it really is like, it captures this Chekhovian energy. I mean, it starts, so Chekhov would never have like a suicide as the first act, because all of his stuff is more about just, people are like, oh, why am I alive? But then they just keep going. I mean, that's the whole thing, isn't it? Just going to keep going, because I'm bourgeois. That's what I do. The Big Chill, of course, needed a big Hollywood entrance, or whatever he did. I think it perfectly holds up really great. Those were the actors of that generation,
right?
So
when you had that idea and it fit in with this idea of what you wanted to do in the novel, this again matching it with Chekhov. At that point, when did it come? Was it immediate that this was going to be a response to what was happening in real time?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I mean, when I wrote Super Sad True Love Story, I wrote it in 2007, 2008, and I thought these things were going to happen 30 years from now. Almost all of the things in that book have happened. I get small.
Aren't we lucky?
Aren't we lucky? I mean, it was a. a country's democracy fall apart in an age of social media, and this was when only MySpace existed, you know. I get little, like The Guardian wrote about, they referenced Superset when they talked about how, in the book there's a tiny line about HSBC buying Goldsmith College, which is like the, I don't know, the Pratt or the Parsons of London. And this year they wrote an article about how Lloyd's of London bought Goldsmith College and then fired all the professors, or half the professors. So all the even tiny things have happened. So what I realized is that kind of like, everything you plot out will happen. There's no present left. It's like we're only living in the future. So you may as well document everything, because the moment you write it down, it becomes a historical novel. So given that, I realized that 2020 would be a momentous year, but also that these momentous years would keep coming, that we are in, someone smarter than me coined this term, the trans-apocalypse, meaning it's not future apocalyptic, it's going to happen all the time. We are constantly living in an apocalypse. And in some ways, I think that as awful as this pandemic was, it was kind of the amuse-bouche to many more horrific things to come.
The transformational.
Yeah.
To wherever we're headed.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Because it exposed all of the difficulties we have as not just as society, but as a species in dealing with any of the major problems that are going to come up these days. And one of the themes of the book is that six of the eight main characters are immigrants.
Yeah, right.
They're all immigrants.
Yeah.
Not even children of immigrants, but immigrants. And that their parents brought them from the Soviet Union, from India, from other parts of the world to be safe. But now they feel that sense of safety with the political climate, as well as the climate, has been evaporating in this country. And they're wondering if their parents made the right choice, and they're wondering if they should make the same choice, i.e. to leave at some point as well. You know, two of the characters are from South Korea, and that country dealt with the pandemic, at least in the initial phase, in a much better way than we certainly did. You know?
Gary Steingart is our guest. His new novel, Our Country, Friends, is out in paperback. It is published by Random House.
Were you as interested in K-pop as it sounds in the book?
Oh, I love everything Korean. My wife's Korean American, and I guess my kids half Korean. Yeah, we love that stuff because it's in the book, for those who haven't read it, there are many different cultures involved, but one is there's a couple, Sasha and Masha, who have a daughter named Natasha. But she's adopted from China, and Masha wants her to learn Russian culture. Sasha doesn't give a damn, and she falls under the sway of Sasha's Korean American high school friend Karen, and she also is in love with Korean pop culture,
yeah.
And she sees Karen as an extension of that. And I think it's true, because when you compare Korean and Russian in the world today, Korean culture and Korea itself is so open to the world that it's exporting, you know, BTS is in some ways the Beatles of today. Are they as good as the Beatles of today? I don't speak enough Korean to know. I don't know. But they're certainly as beloved, if not more beloved, than the Beatles were in their heyday. Russia, on the other hand, has completely closed up. And is committing the worst genocide of the moment, neck and neck with China and the Uyghurs, but I think more. So, you know, that book was written before the invasion of Ukraine, but I think when I look back at it, the way it's structured with the parents wanting this child to have Russian identity, but at the same time, instead she finds a Korean identity, I think is kind of authenticated by what happened afterwards.
Just by the fact that Sasha is a writer, do you relate to that character? I mean, because I assume most of the readers probably think that too, right?
Oh, everyone thinks
that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny, because I always have a character who everyone thinks is a stand-in. So after I wrote Super Sad, the main character is Lenny Abramov, and people would introduce me as Lenny. You know, like, and now we're happy to welcome Lenny Steingart. And I'm like, but I'm less bald than he is, you know. And they'd say, give it time. Yeah, I always, you know, I had, back in the day, I read a lot of Philip Roth when he was, uh, when he was alive, I guess. And he always had a nice stand-in. Zuckerman was his stand-in, right. Sometimes others as well, Portnoy famously. But he always, there was somebody who maybe didn't even practice the same profession as Roth, although Zuckerman was a writer, but was definitely aligned with Roth. And so I find that to be useful, especially since Our Country Friends is not a novel where there's just one or two main protagonists. There's eight protagonists, but somebody has to be the ringleader in the circus or the master, circus master.
I don't know.
There you go. And that role.
Ringmaster.
There you go. Jeez. Just learning English now. I'm going to get
right.
there.
Circus
get
went
there.
Away for a while. Circus it's back went, now.
I know,
but
it's back.
Yeah.
I'm scared of circus eyes or circus cheese. So anyway, that was the role of Sasha in that book. But I think it's, you know, I used to know Roth when back in the day, and I remember he came to the first reading I ever had. It was in a Russian restaurant called the Russian Samovar in 52nd Street. Yeah, some of you may know that place. And I came up to him, and I was just like, ha, 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 Mr. Roth, I'm such a fan. Do you have any advice for a young writer? And I said, yeah, don't eat butter. I was like, what? And then he explained how butter could interfere with certain sexual function down the line. And then he started hitting on my girlfriend at the time. I was like, that's Philip Roth, all right. No. There's Zuckerman. Yeah.
That's a perfect Rothian experience.
It was perfect. It was perfect. It's amazing. I learned so much. And I don't eat butter. I don't touch it.
No.
No butter.
Well, and so how... there was the piece of your health crisis that you wrote about,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
So talk about that and what impact that has on the novel.
So for those of you who haven't read that wonderful New Yorker article, what I find is that a lot of women have read it and a lot of men just can't go there. Yes, you too, right? Has your wife or partner been like, you got to read this? And you're like, hey. For those who haven't, just Google Steingart, Circumcision, The New Yorker, and... Have a good evening. Make yourself a stiff drink, as they say. many puns. So, yes, I was in horrific pain for a while, and I was prescribed a motley of pills, and some of them, pills I've never heard of, that created incredible hallucinations. And without revealing too much of what happens in the end, there are some hallucinations in this book. So I would... Before going to bed, I would pop these pills, you know, walrus style, like just a bunch of pills. And then by the time I woke up, I would be just, I don't know, I would be on another planet. And I would be seeing all these visions and just, it was insane. But by about 3 p.m., the effects would lessen. And that's when I started writing. So I would write down. So if you look at the end of the book, and some people are like, why is there these crazy things at the end of the book? That was me trying to harness all the insanity of these pills. So it's all true. All that stuff is the stuff I was imagining as I was undergoing treatment, as they say.
Did you ever think about holding off and waiting till you were no longer in pain?
At this point, I was so anxious that the pain would never go away that I basically had 20 urologists in New York City. I was desperate to find some kind of solution to the problem. And weirdly enough, the only doctor that that really helped was found in Lake Success, which is the title of my previous novel. It's just one of those crazy things.
Gary Steingart is our guest. His new novel, Our Country Friends, is out in paperback. It is published by Random House.
We did a book show when this book first came out, and I just remember talking to you at the time about that's a lot of stuff to sort of come together this is a lot to explore and unpack and use to write about.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I would say the reminder I would paste on my laptop was go back to the characters. Don't let anything, current events, don't let hallucinogenic drugs, nothing detract from the fact that this is a book, your first book that you're writing that's about, you know, friendship. And interestingly, I was on this podcast, Time to Say Goodbye, that's a trio of Asian American, media folks. And they were talking about how it really reminded them of their own friendships, that this was the first book that kind of addressed the, I went to Stuyvesant High School in Manhattan, which is this nerd farm for people from, you know, Korea, India, and Russia, and China as well. So we all grew up together, and we all had similar parents who beat us and, you know, encouraged us slash beat us, you know. And we all had this love of cabbage, but the Koreans did it best. so all that stuff was there. So I always wanted to talk about... but also the other thing is that I always write about, as I get older, each generation, each of my own decades is covered in these books. So
there's a bit of a melancholy to it, and yet, but it is but hilariously funny.
Well, thank you.
Madcap. There are moments that are just hilariously funny.
You know, I'm a very social person, and here I was in the pandemic, and I was sort of locked
up.
Although we did have a little pod where a couple of friends came by on Sundays, and we all stood around a pool on different sides of the pool and we're wearing masks. I mean, we didn't know, you know, gloves. You know what's funny is that somebody was tweeting, and they're like, you know, I really like this book because it made me nostalgic for, like, COVID 1.0, you know? Life was so good back then, and then Omicron ruined everything. But, yeah, I was very lonely, so I would walk up and down the road. Sometimes I would talk on my earphones with my friends who had scattered to Berlin or Los Angeles or whatever. But mostly I was having conversations in my own mind just to keep myself entertained. So I would create all these eight characters, and then I would sort of walk down this country road and write down what on earth they would be saying to one another, and that became the book.
Did that, not that the writing of the book comes easy, but does that, do those conversations come easy in your mind of the sort of the give and take, the patter between the two or three?
Yeah, I mean, I love conversations. I love the way people both reveal themselves, sometimes inadvertently. I think humor, a lot of humor is people not getting who they are. I'm sure I'm guilty of this as well, but sort of, I always say it's like, you're an aardvark, but you think you're a giraffe, you know, and you're like, oh, I'm going to pick up these leaves now. But you're just a little aardvark, and there's no way, you know. And I think America is a wonderful country that way because everyone always thinks anything is possible, you know. I remember Oberlin, where I went to school, their brochure, their whatever catalog would say, think one person can change the world, so do we, you know. And that to me seems so America. Like, the Russian motto would be like, forget it, you know. Forget it. Not going to happen. But that difference between what one thinks one is and what one is to me the stuff of comedy. And but it's also kind of heartbreaking, right? Because there you are.
Gary Steingart speaking to us at a Northshire bookstore event in Saratoga Springs, New York, in September of this year. Again, Gary Steingart's latest novel is Our Country Friends. It is out in paperback from Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.